Welcome back to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. This episode begins a four-part series about curation that will span the month of June, and I'm happy to be joined by Damian Farnworth for the entire series. Why a series about curation? Because it's a concept that is easy to understand, but not easy to execute. It requires commitment, strategic thinking, and that most precious of resources, time. But when you do it right, and do it right consistently, curation can be a foundational building block of your authority. And if you follow Copyblogger, you know how important developing and maintaining authority is. In the first episode of this series, Damian and I discuss what curation is, the benefits of doing it, and provide an overview of how to do it effectively. Here we go. All right, Damian, so let's talk about curation here. This is the first episode in our new series on curation. And probably the first place to start is just real simply, before we get into the why and how, what is curation, right? When we say curation, what do we mean? If you look at Wikipedia, they provide a couple of good succinct definitions, right? Content curation, Wikipedia defines as simply collecting and sorting content. You also have digital curation, which is defined as the preservation and maintenance of digital assets. For me, I kind of look at it simply as distilling information for myself and my audience. And we're going to focus on, I think when we think of curation, a lot of times we think of it from an audience perspective. But I do think this idea of personal curation is often overlooked, which we're going to highlight in some of the future episodes. But for you, Damian, when you think about curation, how do you kind of define it for yourself?
Let me make a historical note here real quick. Newspapers in the beginning, so 300 years back, American newspapers, I mean, that was basically all that they did. There was no individual sort of independent reporting. It was basically, what newspaper on the East Coast would get a story, they would write the story, and it was pretty basic. You know, it was like so-and-so committed a crime against somebody else. And then, Britain declares war on the U.S., something like that. Well, that information was then just basically transferred to other newspapers who curated the same information. They looked for news like that and just shared it with their audience. And it just that sort of information proliferated, across the nation and the continent. So this idea of curation is age old. It's always been around.
So why curate?
Okay, so the bottom line is like you are already reading, and or at least you should be. And so if you're reading, then sharing that information within with your audience is a great way to feed content that you don't have to create. So if you have an audience on Twitter or Google Plus or Facebook or whatever, everything that you read, whether it's online or even offline, you can turn into a post that you create and you share. So. And that also builds relationships with the people who create the content you share. It's basically networking. So when you come across an article, about reading, for example, you like it, you read it, you sort of sift through it, then you sit down and you write a quick post about it on Google Plus and then share it. But you also mention the author who wrote it and you give a short commentary on it, possibly. But then share it. So you're making a connection with somebody else. You're showing somebody else that you're sharing, that you appreciate their work, and they're sharing it, and you're giving it to their audience. And so this is kind of basically what the web is built on, this idea of getting attention, through other people's audiences. That's an idea that Eric Inge shared in an article in the Copyblogger not too long ago, with this idea of, getting in front of other people. So when you create good content too, the hope is that it gets shared. And so if you're already reading, you should be sharing. And
and before we go any further, you say you're already reading. Are we taking that for granted that people are already reading? Because I feel like you see all these stats that literacy rates are down and people aren't spending as much time reading online. I just read a stat about blog posts that people only actually read 28% of the words in your blog post. So, make it scannable, put big images, right? So I want to make sure that we don't just glaze over that and take it for granted that people are reading. And if you aren't, you really need to read. And especially, we talk about curation. It's what online leaders do, right? Because doing so effectively makes you a person that people turn to for answers. And if we look down the line, what's the benefit of that? Well, eventually those answers can become so valuable, they become solutions, products or services that have price tags attached to them. So it's very important. And there's an article that we'll put in the show notes by the Harvard Business Review called For Those Who Want to Lead, Read. It's a concept you see a lot of places. I've seen a blog post by Michael Hyatt about it where, you know, if you really want to be a leader, online or off, you need to read, you know, whether it's blog posts, whether it's books. And there's a number of benefits that are cited. You know, reading improves intelligence that leads to innovation and insight. Reading across fields improves creativity. It increases verbal intelligence, which makes you a better communicator. You know, reading novels can actually improve empathy and understanding social cues. So there are so many different reasons to do it. And so, Dame, I want to let you go back. I didn't want to take for granted that idea that people are already reading, because if they're not, it's really important to start if being a leader, you know, whether in the online or offline version of that, if that's something that you want to do.
Right. So, yeah. So great point. Now, I'm glad you interrupted, because a quick little side story. Like, not too long ago, I was involved with an online study through Columbia University, and they were studying how people read long-form content. So one of the requirements is you had to read long-form, long-form being very long articles online, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, plus pages. And then they wanted to see how you shared that content. And it's interesting because two things that I learned about myself through that study. It was a three-week study, and each day you read content, and so you'd get an email about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a basic survey. What did you read? Share the link if you can. Did you share it with anybody? And then one of the questions they had, did you share anything that you did not read? And, you know, we all have done that before, right? And so I found myself, this is sort of that Hawthorne effect. I found myself then like, I'm not going to share anything unless I have read it, right? Because it's, you know, even though this survey was anonymous, I was like embarrassed. I was like, yeah, it's kind of, you know, goofy that I'd share something that I haven't read. And, you know, it's kind of a running joke. But so, yeah, I mean, you should be reading in that sense. And so I'm assuming that people are. And just from some of the things that you stated, from a leadership standpoint, reading is huge. But, you know, from a creativity standpoint, reading is huge, too. I can't see how anybody could ever complain about writer's block who is reading consistently and constantly, because you should be always chock full of those books. And it's not just a sort of the superficial, you know, fast glazing through, but it's actually the deep reading where you're making notes. You are, you know, summarizing chapters, you know, as you finish them. You're, taking it, even blogging about it in some circumstances, that helps you kind of digest that. So, yeah, good thing to challenge that assumption. But so if you are already reading, you're already reading online. You know, one of my processes is when I actually do read something that I like, you know, I'll share it to, I'll save it to, my process is usually if I see something I can't read it right away, I'll save it to Readability. And then later in the afternoon or later when I have some time, I'll go into Readability app on my phone and start reading these articles. And then once I'm finished with that, I may go back and share it online. So that was my point, you know, is if you are already reading, then you should be very easily just can slip into actually sharing it and curating it in that sense.
Yeah. So to summarize, right, to kind of put this in order, it's you need to be reading, and assuming that you're doing that, you know, now you're already reading, leverage that time, leverage that knowledge now to establish yourself as an authority, as that thought leader, and share that information with your audience. And you do this by curating sources and bits and pieces of information and then dispensing them. So that's the why, right? That's why you want to curate. Let's get into a little bit of the how, Damien, because I think people probably understand some of the why, but they look at it and they think, man, that really takes some commitment. That takes some time. That takes some strategy. And anybody who's thinking that is 100% right. It takes all of those things. So how do you do it? Well, for me, and Damien, I'll see if you agree with this, you know, mm-hmm. the single biggest challenge I think people face is this time element, right? How do you manage your day to do this? Well, to me, and I'll give a little hat tip to Chris Brogan's new book, The Freaks Shall Inherit the Earth, you know, stop thinking of it so much as time management and think of it as priority management, right? So if becoming an online leader to you is a priority, then curating in some form or fashion, and we're going to talk about the different forms of curation as this series goes along, because it's not just link curation. There's other kinds too, and we'll get into them. Curation needs to become a priority, right? So you have to get better at priority management, putting your most important priorities first, right? Because then your time management kind of flows from that, and that helps you master time. But do you agree with that? Just kind of the mindset that you just have to put it in that category of have to do things,
Well, I think, yeah, again, I think it goes to this idea that, you know, as well, part of it too is we want to be on, as readers, you know, we should be reading. And so we should, you know, in some ways be on top of current trends, current demands, you know, sort of what's the pulse. And so there's that priority there, that pressure to do that there. And so, yeah, and of course, you know, the time management piece is huge. And so, you know, over time, I've sort of, you know, basically the one thing that so the one tip that I would say, this is what you should walk away with as far as when it comes to curation is find the resources that are aggregating the content that's out there. For example, because I mean, the thing that you talk about, that's time management. The other side of that coin is the information overload. Mm-hmm. You know, each day there are so many respectable publications publishing content that it's impossible for you to go and check every single one of those, unless that was your job, but that's very few people's jobs. You have, you know, other things to do. So what I've just found is, you know, trying to find the resources that are aggregating the best content and subscribe and follow those. For example,
so kind of curate the curators.
Exactly. Curate the curators.
There are also tools that can help you become process oriented. And this is something that we will hit on in probably every episode, is the importance of being process oriented, that strategic thinking. And you want to have tools that help you do that, right? So I've become a big user of Evernote, right? Mm-hmm. Using Buffer to help schedule your social media posts is very big. Even a tool like FollowerWonk can help make you more efficient, because you can find out information like, when are my Twitter users the most active, so that you can schedule tweets at smarter mm-hmm. times. Damien, real quick, do you have any specific tools like that? You mentioned Readability, but any other ones like that that you live by that help you with your curation process?
I would say it's probably just a handheld notebook too, or you know, actually marking in books, because I think that's the thing too, is we look for information that's online. We tend to, when we think about, you know, curation, we think about online content, but I think there's a lot of information online or offline that you can actually share. So, you know, pencil and, you know, being able to mark inside of a book, and having a little, post-it notes too, are super helpful. But for you, like you mentioned too, Buffer for scheduling the social media posts, I think is, you know, now you also use Evernote too.
And I'll give a little tease. In one of these episodes, we're going to talk about knowledge curation, which is, you know, basically essentially curating your own knowledge. You know, when you read a book, how do you record and remember what you read? Right. There's a blog post by you, Damien, that helped inspire me to become a better reader. And we're going to talk about some of those topics in those future episodes. And those future episodes will include link curation, right? So I think this is what people think of a lot when they think of curation, right? Like that Friday link post or the links that you tweet out, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's also idea curation. So as ideas come to you, as you find these great nuggets or quotes or ideas, how do you organize them, and then organize them in a way that they can be recalled efficiently later when you're writing a blog post and you need that quote that you saw 6 months ago? How do you do that? And then knowledge creation, right? Like we just talked about, when you're reading books or longer form content, how do you record? How do you remember that information and put it into some kind of format or organization that you can use later? So that's what we'll be talking about in the future in this series. We're really excited about it over these next three episodes of The Lead. With that said, Damien, any final thoughts on this general topic of the how and why of curation?
Yeah. So what's your, what is, when it comes to curation, what is, what are you looking for when you curate content?
What am I looking for specifically?
What are you looking for? Yeah. I mean, do you have a set, you know, sort of idea in your mind
if I'm curating a link or it's something to share with an audience member, it's usefulness, you know? So again, it comes back to that idea of knowing your audience, knowing what they need. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just tweet out a repeat of something else. You know, I think, mm-hmm. you know, I'd like to, I don't know, not contribute more to the echo chamber, but find a unique idea on a common topic that'll be useful.
I guess that's what I was after, was this idea of, like, because, you know, I'll come across things that I think are shareable, but then I get there and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do this. And it usually comes to the point where it's not useful, or it's just because I've learned that, like, things like, you know, like this day was, you know, the day that you know, 256 people were killed in St. Louis by a killer tornado, you know, with a link to a post. You know, that's regional. It's kind of informational. And those rarely get any kind of traction. But it's those ones that are useful that kind of do it. So that's, you know, so you actually, is there content that you'll actually say this is not shareable?
Oh, sure. I mean, if it's uninteresting, or even if it goes to the other end of being profane or inappropriate, you know, I think it all comes down to, you know, what you share is a representation of you. And I think it's very important to remember that and remember the responsibility that you have. If you don't treat it like a responsibility, I think that'll come through over time to your audience, and they won't know, like, and trust you. And curation really is just another way to build know, like, and trust. And so if you don't take it as that responsibility, and if you're not really careful with what you share so that there's value from the click that you've suggested someone make, right, then you're just going to be wasting your time with it. So there's no one-size-fits-all answer to that question. I think everybody has to determine it for themselves, but it starts with knowing your audience, knowing what your audience expects, how to help them.
Right. Final question. So you're talking about branding. I think it's a great way to put it, because, you know, what you put online, of course, you know, we're all sort of crafting this perfect, you know, online social image. But so does that mean that someone, do you share something professional or personal on your professional? So, you know, do you mix business with pleasure when curating content? What do you think? What do you think is a rule of thumb for that?
I mean, it depends on the place. So on copyblogger.com, no. I mean, I tend to keep personal stuff out of there for the most part. Mm-hmm. But on my personal Twitter or personal Google Plus account, yes, because I think those are places where you do want people to get a glimpse of you, right? Now, I'm not going to go complain there when I'm having a relationship issue, or, you know, put some link that's just really personal to me, but I might, you know, talk about a sports topic that's specific to a team I like, or, you know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with sharing, letting people get to know a little bit about you, but you just want to keep it to a minimum and make sure that it's mostly about them. I mean, what right. about you? That it's a tough question. You know, I mean, again, there's no real easy answers or one size fits all answers to it, but
it really isn't, because, you know, I think about it, because they're, you know, certainly they're, you know, thinking again about that, of crafting your sort of online image, and so curating content is the way that you do that, because really that's what we're kind of doing, right? Is we're saying that, you know, this is something that I enjoy, and this defines me in some sense, right? Whether we oppose it, whether we are for it. You know, when I think about my account, I really don't think about my, you know, say Twitter account or Google Plus account as personal versus professional. I really think about this as a reflection of who I am. So, you know, I will majority of the time share things that are, professional, that are about writing, they're about content marketing, but there occasionally will be things where I might mention something about football, or I might mention something about Christianity, and just, you know, to help kind of fill out that persona, you know, that people have of me and stuff. And I found that's been helpful, because you get people who come out of the woodworks and say things like, oh, you know, I love football too, or, you know, who will be encouraged by that, you know, not just in a sort of one-dimensional professional standpoint, but there'll be other things about you that people will recognize. And then give you, in a sense, you know, more sort of places that people can hang their hat, you know.
Yeah, well, and curation is about relationship building, you know, yeah. I think at its essence. And so, you know, when you do that and when you're building relationships effectively, some of those more personal things are going to come out, and I think that's good.
Just don't let those emails from the frat days get out.
Ha, yeah, exactly. By the way, how did this flip all of a sudden to you asking the questions here? that was a nice little spontaneous change. I like it.
You bet. I had questions I needed to ask.
That was good. All right. Well, cool. You know, I think this is a good intro to the topic, Damien. I'm looking forward to these next three, because I think it'll be a unique take and unique way to break these three areas down. And we talked more philosophical today. I think there will be a lot more specific tips people can walk away from in these next three episodes to really help you start curating if you haven't, and if you have, become more efficient, become better, become more effective at it. Damien, I'll talk to you next week, and we'll go on with episode number two.
Sounds good, Jared. Thank you much.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Lead. If you're enjoying these episodes and finding them useful, please consider giving the show a rating or a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. Or, If iTunes isn't quite your thing, you can listen on Stitcher. Go to copyblogger.com/Stitcher. And if you'd like to share it elsewhere, we'd love if you tweeted about the show or just sent an email to a friend and told them about it. And again, make sure, go to the Google Plus conversation, tweet us at Jared Morris or at Damian Farnworth. Let us know some of your tips and tricks about curation, right? What sources do you use? What tools do you use? We'd love to know some of what you're doing out there so that we can report back, share, and really crowdsource the most effective curation process possible. Okay, everybody, we will be back next week with another episode of The Lead, the second episode in our series on curation, where we'll talk about specifically link curation. To do it effectively, you need to be very process-oriented. We're going to take you through some of our processes and show you some best practices for getting the most out of your link curation. Talk to you soon, everybody.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.